This is the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you decided to tune in today. On our agenda today, what's going on in the stock market? What should you be doing with your stock holdings or stock funds in your 401k? I will be picking the brains of two experts and offering my opinion as well. Joining me momentarily is Mr. Brian London. Mr. London is the host of the New Orleans Investment Conference and also the editor and publisher of Gold Newsletter, also president and CEO of Jefferson Financial. Also, I'm very excited to have on the program today Dr. Mark Faber. Many of you probably know Dr. Faber as a frequent commentator on many of the financial networks. He is a Swiss money manager and also the publisher of the well-known report, the Doom, Boom, and Gloom Report. He'll be joining me as well. Before I get to those interviews, I'd like to remind you we do have some free resources coming up. We've got, in light of some recent Social Security collection changes, we have some couple of additional resources that you can attend. We have a free dinner seminar, actually several coming up. January 26th will be at Boulder Creek Golf Club, February 2 at Sunnybrook Country Club, and February 18 at Watermark Country Club. You can register while capacity remains by visiting the website socialsecuritydinner.com. The website, again, is socialsecuritydinner.com. And in light of what's going on in the markets, we also have a new retirement rules class coming up on January the 30th. This class is held at the East Beltline campus of Western Michigan University. It begins at 9 o'clock a.m., concludes at 2:30 p.m. The cost for the class is just $49. That's all the handouts, book, lunch for you and a guest. You can register or get more information by visiting the website, newretirementrules.com. I'm pleased to have as a first-time guest on the Everything Financial radio program, Mr. Brian London. Mr. London has spent four decades working in the investment market arena. He serves as president and CEO of Jefferson Financial. He is a highly regarded publisher of market analysis, and he produces investment-oriented events. Under the Jefferson Financial umbrella, Mr. London publishes and edits Gold Newsletter, and he has also hosts the New Orleans Investment Conference. So, Brian, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Dennis.
Talk to me a bit, Brian, about what your take is as to what's going on in the markets this month. It's been a wild ride. What's driving it?
Well, it's obviously been very volatile, but I think what's happening in the stock market is that stocks are looking ahead and not seeing a lot of impetus for the U.S. economy. It's also being shaken up by more signs of economic weakness in China, some really disappointing economic reports coming out of China, and volatility in the Chinese currency. So that's what's happening in equities, and gold's really benefiting from a number of factors, one being seasonality. It's typically strong in the January-February time frame because of Asian buying, particularly the Chinese Lunar New Year buying, which is greatly centered around gold. It's also benefiting from the a special situation kind of in the paper gold markets, the futures markets in the U.S., where the commercial interest, the large commercials, businesses that use gold in their daily business are less short gold than they've been in well over a decade, perhaps ever. And the large speculators are very short gold. So the commercials, when they're almost flat, when they're hardly short at all, gold market, that's really equivalent to being a very bullish stance, because these large commercials have to short gold daily in their business. So they're really betting on a rebound in the gold price. And they're usually right. So what may happen, what may occur as a result of this, is a pretty dramatic short covering rally, where the speculators are forced to cover their short bets and buy gold, essentially hand over fist before they start really losing money on their short bets.
So, Brian, I've had some guests on the program who have deduced that gold found its bottom in the 1050 range, saying that that's pretty close to the production cost for an ounce of gold. Would you verify that is the case?
Yeah, it's pretty close. It's pretty close to what's called the all-in sustaining cost of gold production. And that cost totals every cost factor that goes into producing an ounce of gold, including, you know, corporate overhead, financing costs, et cetera. The fact is that the cash cost of gold is also an important metric, and that's somewhat lower, because if a mine is producing gold above the near short-term cash costs, it's still making some money, some positive cash flow that it can deliver to the parent company. So as long as the price of gold is above the cash costs, you really won't see too many mine closures. Now, with that said, there have been about 4 or 5 years of severely curtailed exploration and development expenditures by the big companies, so there's not a lot of gold that's been found recently. And there have been some cutbacks in new mines that haven't been, that have been kind of shelved or mothballed, and some cutbacks on some very large mines. So we're starting to see the lower price impact supplies. And, you know, the old saying that the cure for low prices is low prices, new supplies are not being produced at these low prices, and therefore the price has to rise.
Well, if you're just joining us, we're chatting today with Mr. Brian London. Brian is president and CEO of Jefferson Financial. He publishes and edits Gold Newsletter, also hosts the New Orleans Investment Conference. And, Brian, moving ahead, do you expect that gold prices will continue to rally? What's your outlook for 2016?
I think we're going to have a positive year for 2016. I don't know that we're going to have a blow-off to the upside, but the general consensus, and I agree with it, is that we're right around the long-term bottom, that it would be very difficult for gold to go much lower. And, in fact, the downside risk compared to the upside potential is very low. So there is the potential for a very strong price rise at some point this year, but I think we ought to count on, at the very least, a sideways to mildly upside market as gold continues to consolidate and bottom around these levels.
So, Brian, given that Fed policy over the past several years has been literally printing money, why has gold declined in price? Isn't that a bit unusual, and that just kind of defies logic?
It does, but a lot about gold over the past 5 to 10 years defies logic, because the price of gold is set in the Western markets, in the, you know, basically on the COMEX, the futures and options exchanges for gold. And the reason why is that these gold contracts, futures contracts, are backed by very little gold. In fact, there's over 150 claims, paper claims, for every ounce of gold that's actually sitting in the COMEX vaults, backing those contracts. So it's one of the most highly leveraged of all commodity contracts. And it really has very little tie to the actual supply-demand fundamentals for the metals. It really, the price of gold is set by Western speculators who are betting one way or the other on sentiment and headlines from the Fed. In contrast, the Eastern buyers and savers and investors, particularly in China and India, are really amazed that the price is still so affordable, the price of gold. And as long as these Western markets are suppressing the price by trading these paper contracts, they're buying as much as they can, and demand in Asia has absolutely skyrocketed over the last few years. The net effect is that there's a river of gold flowing from the Western vaults to the East, and it's only a matter of time till those Western vaults essentially run dry.
So, Brian, when you mentioned 150 paper claims for every ounce of gold, explain in a little more detail to our listeners exactly what that means. And my follow-up question to that would be, does that make this market fairly easy to manipulate or move price?
it's always been easy for the paper gold traders in the West to manipulate the price because they're, again, they're setting the price through these paper contracts. The but what's happened recently, it has typically been, say, 30 to 40 claims for every ounce of gold in the COMEX warehouse that's available for delivery to back up a futures contract or an options contract. So if somebody goes long gold on the COMEX, they have the right but not the obligation to purchase the gold backed by that contract. And they can take delivery. They have the right to actually have that gold delivered to them. But the vast majority of investors or speculators don't take delivery of the gold. They just settle for cash. But if the supplies of gold backing these contracts have dwindled to such an extent that if only one large-scale investor decided to say, hey, I'm going to take delivery of my gold this month, it would wipe out all of the holdings in the COMEX warehouse. Now, they would scramble to find gold and supply it, but it would still create an uncertainty, and it would still highlight the fact that there's very little gold out there in Western vaults backing these contracts, and I think the result would be a spike in the gold price.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for this segment. Our guest today is Mr. Brian London, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial, and we will continue our conversation with him when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. Quick reminder, our new retirement rules class is coming up on Saturday, January 30. You can get more information or register by visiting the website newretirementrules.com. I'm going to continue my conversation with Mr. Brian London. If you're just joining us, Brian serves as President and CEO of Jefferson Financial. He is the publisher and editor of Gold Newsletter, and if you'd like to get more information on that, you can go to goldnewsletter.com. I'd encourage you to do that. And Brian also hosts the New Orleans Investment Conference. And Brian, that's a pretty impressive event. Tell the listeners all about it.
Well, we actually just completed last fall our 41st annual event. So we've been around for a good long while, and we actually were the first big investment conference dedicated for individual investors out there. And over the years, we've had a number of really big-name speakers, the giants of recent history. We've had Lady Margaret Thatcher. Ayn Rand gave her last public appearance at our event. We've had Alan Greenspan. We've had the list goes on and on of all the top geopolitical, economic, and investment experts out there. And we're kind of known for bringing that level of expertise to the event every year. And it attracts about 500 or so sophisticated individual investors who want to learn about what's going on in geopolitics and economics and specific investment advice to take advantage of the trends that are developing. And it's always been ahead of the curve. It's a wonderful experience to be able to meet some of these big figures in person, kind of mingle with them and mingle with other investors who share your views and are information hungry and looking for information that's unfiltered through the major networks.
Well, Brian, let's talk just a minute about Gold Newsletter. If our listeners were able to look inside your latest issue, what kind of advice are you giving to your readers?
I'm telling them that gold right now represents one of the best risk-reward options out there for investors. The downside risk at these levels is very low, but there are so many factors that could take the price much higher in the near term, plus the fact that the price seems almost destined to rise considerably over the longer term, that it makes sense to accumulate not only gold and silver, but some of the high potential mining and exploration stocks that are out there right now selling for pennies on the dollar.
So, Brian, let's talk about the relation between gold and equity markets. So if you were to go back and historically take a look at, you know, the price of gold per ounce and maybe compare it to the value of the Dow or the Standard & Poor 500, what kind of relationship might exist, if any?
Well, there are some relationships that are tracked by the Dow to gold ratio. And right now, that ratio is showing that stocks are dramatically overvalued in relation to gold. So, you know, you've seen a lot of volatility in the equity markets right now that seems to or shows the potential that we may be reaching a long-term top in equities. By the same token, you look at the price of gold and you see that we seem to be approaching a long-term bottom or be at a long-term bottom with a lot of upside potential from here. So if you're looking simply from a asset allocation and long-term timing standpoint, you would think that a shifting of allocation from equities, the broad equities markets, to the precious metals and mining shares would be advisable right now. And I think that's a trend that's going to grow. We've already seen it early this year that a good bit of money has flown into the sector, into the gold, the metals and mining sector, from the equity markets, and I think that's going to continue as the year goes on.
So, Brian, when you take a look at what's happened to just commodities over the last several years, commodities have been in a significant bear market. Mm-hmm. To what extent has that affected what gold has done?
Well, it's affected all of the metals, all of the commodities, and it's been a function of a slowing economy globally, particularly in China. So less demand for the metals. It's a function of the fact that the metals rose too far too fast. It's very cyclical commodities. The price trends are very cyclical. They get overextended to the upside and to the downside. So they got overextended to the upside, and now there's an argument that perhaps they're overextended to the downside. But gold has been one of the better performing commodities because it is not so much an industrial commodity as a monetary one. It functions as money. So when there are uncertainties in the financial markets or when the public feels that currencies are headed downward or being devalued, then gold will benefit. The problem for gold lately has been that the dollar has benefited at the expense of all of the other currencies out there. And for gold to get in a really long-term bull market, there has to be a consensus view among investors and savers that all currencies are headed downward, not just other currencies besides the dollar.
So, Brian, is it your take, given central bank policies around the world that you know, and could be summarized probably in a word, print, that will be the case moving ahead, that the dollar will have to get weaker along with other fiat currencies, and that will be beneficial for gold?
It will. You look at the dollar right now, and the U.S. is the only economy where there is a tightening process in place. Every other economy in the world is doing their own versions of QE, really printing money hand over fist. So you look at that, and you say, if the U.S. economy begins to show any signs of weakness, and we're long overdue from a time standpoint for a recession, but if some of these little signs that we're seeing here and there grow and we actually start to slip into a recession and the Fed is forced to reverse course, then gold will really take off in response, because the only thing holding it back right now is the fact that the U.S. is tightening and not expanding monetary policy.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today has been Mr. Brian London. Brian is president and CEO of Jefferson Financial. He publishes and edits Gold Newsletter. You can get more information at goldnewsletter.com. And, Brian, we certainly appreciate you joining us today, and we'd love to have you back.
Great to be with you, Dennis.
As I close this segment, let me remind you that in light of the new law changes affecting how you can collect your Social Security benefits, we do have three free dinner seminars coming up on January 26, February 2, and February 18 here in the Grand Rapids area. You can get more information by visiting socialsecuritydinner.com. And I'd like to invite you to stay tuned. I'll be back talk and talk to Swiss money manager Dr. Mark Faber after these words. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you decided to tune in today. Joining me momentarily, Dr. Mark Faber. Before I get to my conversation with Dr. Faber, let me remind you, if you're concerned about what's going on in the markets this year, if you're concerned about how it might affect your IRA or 401k investments, I'd like to invite you to get a different perspective. We believe that economies cycle and where markets move may be entirely predictable. We talk about it in detail at our new retirement rules class, and we'd like to share the ideas with you. The cost for the class is just $49. You can get more information by visiting the website, newretirementrules.com. The website, again, newretirementrules.com. I am pleased to have as a returning guest on the Everything Financial Radio program, Dr. Mark Faber. Dr. Faber is the publisher of the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report. You can learn more at gloomboomdoom.com. Dr. Faber, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Let me start, Dr. Faber, with what you see happening in equity markets around the world. U.S. stock market indices are down to start 2016, as are most other major indices around the world. How low do stocks go here?
Well, I mean, we are very oversold near term everywhere. We sold off really hard in the last 2 weeks. And so a rebound should occur. But instead of listening to all the Fed members and to strategists and economists who work for fund management companies and Wall Street that have a vested interest of telling their clients that the market will go up and that the economy is improving, I would listen to the stock market, and frequently the stock market is a better forecaster, or usually the stock market is a better forecaster than economists, and the stock market has clearly given a signal that the global economy is not healing, but actually deteriorating.
Dr. Faber, what's your opinion of the recent statements made by former Federal Reserve Governor Richard Fisher, who stated that, in short, that the Fed really created a bubble? They were looking for a wealth effect. Isn't it shocking that we maybe heard the truth from a former Federal Reserve board member?
Yes, I think. But this goes back to the late 1990s when Mr. Greenspan believed that a bubble, or say a huge increase in the valuations of technology stocks, would stimulate innovation, and then the bubble burst after March 2000, and then the Fed under Greenspan, but under the influence principally of its academic pillar, Mr. Bernanke, decided to slash interest rates and keep interest rates artificially low in order to create a housing bubble. By the way, the housing bubble, the proponent was also Mr. Krugman, Paul Krugman. And so the Fed has been blowing bubbles for a long time. And every economist who follows, say, the Austrian school knows that bubbles eventually burst and that they cause more problems in the long run than that they are helpful. So the housing bubble then burst and the Fed again superimposed an asset inflation after 2009. And the only way to keep this going is basically to keep doubling up. In other words, they would have to launch QE4 and not at $65 billion a month, but probably at anywhere between $150 to $200 billion a month of asset purchases to again push up asset prices. And in the long run, of course, it's not going to help and we've had numerous side effects from this money printing exercise by the Fed. So I think that if you assume, and there the Fed has been successful at creating this asset inflation since 2009, stocks have been going up strongly, bond prices have been up, been going up strongly worldwide, in other words, interest rates fell, and until 2011 commodities rose, and until 2011 we also had emerging markets booming. But one after these asset classes then comes off, and it creates more problems than it has solved. And if now the markets, the asset markets, are no longer going up, in other words, since 2011, emerging markets are going down. Since 2011, commodity prices are going down, and some peaked out in 2008, I may add. And high-end real estate in London and in New York and in the Hamptons is no longer going up, and in some cases, it's actually gone down. When you have this asset inflation turning into an asset deflation, you should be expecting that it has a very negative impact on discretionary spending, that is, on the economy.
Mark, you had mentioned commodities have been falling since 2011. If you look at agricultural commodities, we've seen corn, for example, go from $8 to maybe $3.75. What's your forecast for agricultural commodities moving ahead?
Well, I don't follow ag commodities very closely because it's a very specialized sector of the asset markets where you need to know about the weather and about the stocks and so forth. But a friend of mine who is an expert about agricultural commodities, he thinks they're about to bottom out, and that from this level we could see strong rallies. Now, the problem with this view is that for professional traders, there may be an opportunity. For the typical retail investor or individual investor to play a rising agricultural commodity cycle is very difficult. It's very costly because he has to buy ETFs, and then there's the rollover costs.
So, Mark, give me your opinion as to where oil prices go from here.
Well, my opinion is not worse a lot, because if I look at all the experts in the oil industry, when oil was around $100 a barrel, they all said, oh, it's going to go to $120 or $150 a barrel. And now the same people say it will go down to $10, $20 a barrel. So, you know, it's possible. In 2008, in other words, between September 2007 and July 2008, oil went from $78 a barrel to $147 a barrel. And then within 6 months, it dropped to $32 a barrel in December 2008. And then it rebounded strongly. So we can have a lot of volatility. My sense is that we may still go somewhat lower. That's possible. But the bearish sentiment is now very high. And I think kind of an equilibrium price will be somewhere between $30 and $60. So we may still go down, but then the rebound could be quite strong.
Well, if you're just joining us, we're chatting today with Dr. Mark Faber. He is the publisher of the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report. You can learn more at gloomboomdoom.com. And I'll continue my conversation with Dr. Faber when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. This is the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you decided to listen in today. I'll continue my conversation with Swiss money manager and newsletter publisher Dr. Mark Faber in just a moment. Before I do, I want to remind you that in light of some recent rather significant changes in the way you might be able to collect Social Security, we are conducting some free Social Security maximization workshops where we'll talk about these changes and how you might be affected. If you're between the ages of 55 and 65, we would encourage you to attend. We will be at Boulder Creek Golf Club on January 26, Sunnybrook Country Club on February 2, Watermark Country Club on February 18. All the meetings begin at 6 and conclude at 7:30 with a complimentary dinner. So far this year, we've had a very, very robust response to folks attending our workshops, so we do have these things fill up rather quickly. If you'd like to attend or get more information, just visit socialsecuritydinner.com. The website, again, socialsecuritydinner.com. I have the pleasure of chatting today with Dr. Mark Faber, the publisher of the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report. You can learn more at gloomboomdoom.com. And, Mark, we were chatting in the last segment a bit about Fed policy, the Fed has really slated for potentially some more interest rate increases this year. Do you think they actually do that?
Well, I was at the presentation last October and November in the U.S., and one of the more well-known newsletter writers, he said he guarantees that the Fed will increase interest rates in December. In other words, move. He was right. But then he also said he thinks that it will move to 3% in 2016 on the Fed fund rate. That, I think, is out of the question. I believe if you look at the New York Stock Exchange and stocks in general in the U.S., on average, stocks are down more than 26% from the 12-month highs. But the indices, they have kind of masked the decline in the sense that the indices until 2 weeks ago have been holding up very well because of a handful of stocks, Facebook, Netflix, Amazon, Google, and maybe another 20 shares. But the typical share, the median share, the average share is down more than 25%. And the Fed, the moment they see the market down, say, 20% from the high in May 2015, S&P at 2,134, the moment they see the market close to down 20% or more, they'll cut rates again and they launch QE4.
Mark, at what point does QE end? I mean, you can't print money forever, so what's the end game here?
Well, in theory, if you look at Zimbabwe, it seems that they can print money forever. But the consequences are, of course, very, very negative. No country in the world has ever become rich from printing money. It destroys industry, it destroys capital spending, and encourages speculation and playing the asset markets, which become very volatile. And it impoverishes the majority of the population. So in that sense, I agree with you, it won't last forever. There'll be a revolution at some point if they keep on going from QE3 to QE4 to QE99. But it can last a few years. That we have to see. It's not helpful for the economy. And more academics and economists, they come out and say that actually the unintended consequences are far more negative than the Fed ever anticipated.
So, Mark, when I look just at U.S. government debt and private sector debt, it totals about just under $120,000 per citizen, if my research is correct. That certainly tends to be deflationary. And then, assuming we have another round of QE, that's going to tend to be inflationary. So how do you see this coming out? Do we have inflation followed by deflation? Where do you come down on that whole discussion?
Well, we don't know for sure, because it was believed that if you print money, you get very high inflation rates. But the problem is that people defined inflation wrongly. They just looked at consumer prices. And by the way, when we look at living costs in the U.S., they're of course going up far more than what the government publishes on the personal consumption expenditure index or consumer price inflation. So that has already been debatable. But basically, if you print money, in other words, as Bernanke says, you drop dollar bills onto the U.S. from helicopters, you can get inflation in wages or in consumer prices, but you can also get it in the prices of assets, stocks, bonds, real estate, collectibles, vintage cars, paintings, ceramics, stamps, and so forth. So all these things, they've gone up a lot, but they're no longer going up at the present time.
So, Mark, given all this printing, at what point does the U.S. dollar's status as the world reserve currency become significantly threatened?
Well, I think the U.S. dollar status as a world currency is already under threat. But because the U.S. so far has had better public relation managers, the U.S. looks relatively good compared to other countries. And so at the moment, the U.S. doesn't have a problem. But one day, obviously, people will lose faith in the dollar if they keep on printing money. That's when the dollar will go down. And that's when, in my view, interest rates will also start to increase.
So, Mark, given that, and given that you're forecasting that we'll likely see another round of QE, are you bullish on gold?
Yes. I'm of the belief that eventually gold prices will be substantially higher. But I've also maintained now for more than 2 years that U.S. government bonds are not a bad alternative, because if you compare U.S. government bonds, they yield, say, today a little bit less than 2%. Compare that with Japanese bonds at less than 0.3%, German government bonds at less than 0.5%, and so forth. Even French, Spanish, and Italian government bonds have a lower yield than U.S. government bonds. So relative to these instruments, I think U.S. government bonds are not so bad. Number two, we talked about additional QEs by the Fed, which I think is likely to come. What we also need to discuss is negative real interest rates and negative rates. The Fed, what they can do, and this has been discussed also by the Bank of England and the ECB, is to introduce negative interest rates. In other words, you put a deposit of $100,000 in the bank, and after a year, you only get back, say, $97,000. So you lose 3%. In that environment, I think that gold and other precious metals will perform reasonably well.
Mark, I have time for one more question. I know the listeners would love to hear, what are you advising your newsletter readers presently? What markets are you bullish on?
Well, the number one recommendation I have is this. markets are very difficult to predict, and the record of people that predicted markets, including mine, is poor. I repeat, it's very poor, because we don't know about the future. We know very little about history, and many people don't even know about the present, and they know nothing about the future. But the worst case is, of course, if the markets are not free markets. In other words, if the markets are manipulated by ministries, including the Ministry of Truth in the U.S., and the Ministry of Arrogance, as represented by central banks. And these people, they manipulate markets with monetary and fiscal measures and subsidies and, you know, all kinds of gimmicks that benefit, actually, large corporations and wealthy people. And in this environment, the best advice I can give, we don't know about the future. The best is to be diversified. So you own some real estate, you own some shares, you own some cash and bonds, and you own some precious metals in physical form. But you should also diversify and hold assets outside the U.S. That, I think, is important.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today has been Dr. Mark Faber, publisher of the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report. You can learn more at gloomboomdoom.com. Dr. Faber, thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
And let me remind you, if you tuned in at the end of the program today, that we have our new retirement rules class coming up on January the 30th. It's a class that will help you sort out what's going on in the economy. In the class, we talk about how economic cycles, we believe, are predictable and how asset classes will behave in certain environments. If you need to connect the dots and figure out what's going on in the markets, we would encourage you to register to attend. You can do so by visiting the website newretirementrules.com. The website, again, is newretirementrules.com. And we also have, in light of the recent Social Security collection rule changes, three upcoming Social Security maximization workshops. They are free. They begin at 6 p.m. and conclude at 7:30 p.m. with a free dinner. They're coming up January 26, February 2, and February 18. Full details are available at socialsecuritydinner.com. The website, again, socialsecuritydinner.com. That's our program for this week. Hope you got something you can use. We'll talk again next week. Bye.